Hi, Bobby. Thanks for joining me.
Rick, what a pleasure to have you.
It's good to have you back again. This is Rick Thomas, host of Yachting International Radio's Yachting USA, coming to you today on board Motor Yacht BG, or is it more appropriate, BG Charade?
BG Charade is the correct name.
Well, you used the correct name, BG Charade. It's got a great heritage. And we're at the Palm Beach Boat Show on a very wet Friday. It's one of those days that's just almost unfortunate we have this weather.
It's so true, isn't it?
I know. You look around and so much effort goes into putting these things together, and then boom, you know, Mother Nature says, But, you know, you make the best of it. And, you know, so the upside was walking down the docks to get here, no crowds.
Yeah.
I came right here. It was not hard. The exhibitors are not happy to hear that, though. But it's really good to see you in person.
Well, thanks so much, and thank you for having me again.
Well, thanks for having me on board. This is a beautiful boat, and it's got a great heritage. And, you know, this podcast, it's generally not about pretty boats and pretty girls and the fluffy stuff. It's about the nuts and bolts of the industry. Mm-hmm. But you're on a Fed ship. You're on a Fed ship that you've spent a lot of time and energy and love to make it your boat.
Mm-hmm.
And you've gone through refits twice, and you have an amazing result of your energy and efforts. And I think it's worth paying attention to that, because this is what this is all about in a lot of ways.
Rick, the boat just has such a legacy that we wanted to keep it traditional, but we wanted to update it and end up sort of with a Newport Bridgehampton beach house, but on a classic Fed ship
from description.
Paul Allen owning the boat and taking it around the world three times, including up the Nile. In this very room, you've had Peter Gabriel, Phil Collins, Bon Jovi. Paul was an aspiring musician, and he would fly in all of these great talents to jam with him and play with him in this room.
That's cool.
And of course, Paul then selling the boat to Joe Louis, and Joe had it for 10 years. And then of course we, as you mentioned, did the refit, and we've now had the boat for 10 years.
That's
so
great.
It's hard to believe it went so fast.
You know, it's life's like that though.
Yeah.
And I'm coming up in 10 years on my little 10 meter boat, and just did a major refit last year and put stupid money into it. And why do you do that? Because, you know,
it's a love.
Yeah, it's a love. Yeah, absolutely. And it's proportional, but it's worth it. We talk about our families, and mm-hmm. we were talking before we started this about what my son Tristan and I do. My son Tristan is with me today. Spring break starts for him. So he's helping Dad on the docks here, getting things set up, and hopefully learning a few things as he goes along.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And one of the biggest takeaways, I think, for this generation is to really understand what it is to be in the long game and build relationships and you know, have a love for something. Yeah. You know, that things happen so quickly and they seem to be so temporary sometimes. Mm-hmm. And life's not like that. Yeah. So you've had the boat for 10 years. Shortly after buying the boat, you refit it at Director's.
Yeah, it was a two-year refit where we literally took the boat down to basically the studs, raised the ceiling, added an extra stateroom. It just never stopped. You know, when you start, you just don't know where it's going to end.
Right.
And, but you know, the end result is we came in, I think number five or six in the world for super yacht refits in 2016.
That's
we flew
real.
To Italy for the celebration, and it is truly one of the most iconic Fed ships of all Fed ships.
And she's a beautiful girl.
Yeah,
absolutely
the best.
Yeah, I mean, and there's such this elegant style, this gentleman style to these boats that I think are enduring.
Yeah,
there's a lot of trends you see coming, but I'm guessing some of these trends are gonna be going.
Yeah.
And yet you see some of these boats that were designed by De Voot Naval Architects 20, 30 years ago that are here and they're enduring. And,
And Rick, it's traveled the world on its own bottom.
On its own bottom. I love that.
Like it doesn't, for a boat this size to be able to do that.
It speaks volumes, doesn't it?
Completely.
Well,
you know, hats off to Fedship.
Right. So you're talking about traveling the world. I had the opportunity, and I got to make sure I get this right. I met this lovely couple who was introduced to them. They're from Halifax, Nova Scotia. And their business is creating destinations and promoting Eastern Canada. Super Yachts Northeast. I kept calling them. I might have just screwed up again. I think I was called.
Tristan, if I'm working with your father, it's a lot of work.
But Adam and Amanda Lambert, Rhea, edit this, please. 4, 3, 2. Adam and Amanda Langley of Super Yachts Northeast are an amazing couple that are opening up destinations into that whole island of Nova Scotia and the Inland Sea there, and describing fjords and a destination that sounds so spectacular that very few people go to. And I think that's one of the luxuries and privileges of having a vessel like this, that you can say, hey, I want to go there.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, I mean, from the Suez Canal through the Maldives into Singapore, Indonesia, Malaysia. I mean, this boat, just in the last 10 years, we've owned it. We were just talking last night. I think we've been over 40-something countries.
Wow.
It's amazing when you think about it.
Yeah, that really is. And so that's what I was looking forward to in this conversation. You are actually an owner that uses your boat, you know. And unfortunately, living in South Florida, I see so many of these boats stuck at the dock, you know. And the crew's unhappy because they're stuck at the dock. And, you know, they get used occasionally here and there. But you actually are using this boat. Now, you did, right before COVID, go out in the Western Pacific.
We did.
And you got stuck.
Yeah, that was a bit of a disaster. We were in Phuket in 2019, and we were exploring that part of Thailand. And then we left to come back for Christmas in October, November. And then when we went to go back, of course, COVID came along, and Thailand closed its borders, and we couldn't get in the boat couldn't leave.
Wow.
So it was stuck there, but having it stuck there gave us the opportunity to do another smaller refit and just refresh everything.
Good.
And we completed its 30-year survey and classification there, so we got a lot done.
Wow, 30-year special survey.
Yeah.
That's real.
It was.
Yeah. I was just involved in a Hockford 20-year special survey, and a lot happens, and it gets expensive.
Yeah.
And that ties into conversations I have with brokers, and you're working with a high net worth individual that says, hey, I want to buy a boat. And so often it's usually a brokerage boat. You know, some people will build new, but more often than not, they're gonna, and that, there comes a whole conversation. Do you know that you've got your 10-year, your 20-year, your 30-year special coming? Do you really understand what that's all about? That becomes a surprise for some of the guys and gals that are buying these boats when all of a sudden they realize that, oh, there's a huge expense. I didn't see it.
I don't think the expensive part is buying the boat.
No.
I think people don't understand what it takes to run the boat.
That's right.
And when you're having to write those checks every month.
Yeah.
Month over month, year over year, that's the expensive part.
That's true. And again, it's because there's a specific love for doing this. That's the only reason you do it. You know, you put a boat in the charter, you can monetize the boat somewhat, but you're not paying for it.
Never.
No. It's just one way to offset costs a little bit and keep the boat in use, or keep the crew happy, whatever.
Yeah.
And as a guy that's in yacht management, I've had these conversations both with brokers and owners, and I think it's so important when you sit down and discuss what is a budget for a boat. You know, what have you signed up for? Because if you do it wrong, you're setting everybody up for a failure and disappointment. And if you do it right, you're able to maintain the boat like you see it here. And so when you say, throw the lines off, Captain, I want to go, you know the engine's going to start, you know the generator's working, the air conditioning's online, the cranes are working, the gangway can get put away, the anchors can be handled, and you can leave the dock.
Yeah.
And I've had so many circumstances in my career where you know, those phone calls come in and they get frantic because something's not working, and the boss is going to be so upset. And oftentimes it's just because things weren't paid attention to,
or stuff just goes wrong.
Well, that's always going to happen.
Yeah, you know,
that's always going to happen.
We run with a crew of 12. And when you think, you know, put that in perspective, that's, you know, close to 75 meals a day.
Yeah.
Between the guests and the crew.
Yep.
And just the logistics of what that takes every day.
The laundry every day.
It just, there's always something coming up that needs to be adjusted, repaired, fixed, whatever it is.
Right. That's part of the game.
Yeah.
And that's kind of my messaging when I talk to owners. It's like, okay, as long as you understand what you're setting up for and you're willing to do it, then it can be done nicely most of the time. You know, and you're talking about charter, and it's interesting. I've got a partner, Herb Magney. He and I are putting together a company right now that our focus is actually going to be on concierge level services for owners.
Well, Herb's one of the best.
He is, so, if not the best. Yeah. And so this comes from our cumulative experience in the maritime industry. This is fun. You'll like this because you can appreciate some of this. We're within 4 months of each other in age. We both went to commercial diving school in 1979, 1980, two different schools, opposite coasts. We both ended up in the Gulf of Mexico in 1980, working in the offshore oil industry. We both segued from the offshore oil industry into the wonderful world of yachting. He got into running boats. I started nautical structures.
And you got all the looks.
You know what? Someone's got to pull that card. But he's got all the brains.
Oh.
You know, it's a cool dynamic because he's run boats his whole life. He understands the nature.
Yeah.
You know, I've been at sea, and I've got that DNA in me. But he's been at sea, running boats. And as a captain, it's not just, you're not just running the boat. You're handling the crew. You're handling the owners. You're handling the guests. You're doing logistics. Yeah. There's so much to it. And so I bring this up because I think it's relevant in the conversation that when it's done right, you create an experience that retains the owner's desire to stay in the industry. Mm-hmm. And we talk about what I call the sacred trinity. And what I mean by the sacred trinity is I think there are three elements that identify whether or not the industry is healthy and whether we're in a good place or not. One is owner satisfaction, owner's experience. Mm-hmm. That's number one. Number two is crew. The crew's got to have a good culture. They've got to be happy in what they're doing to ensure the owner gets what he or she is hoping to achieve in the experience on board their boat. And the third is the shipyard piece.
Yeah.
And we talked about this last time we spoke, and that is that when I got in this industry in North America, between Canada and America, there was over 44 shipyards building crew-served yachts. And that would have been 1990, you know, 1988, 1990. There's less than five right now.
Isn't that incredible?
It's horrible.
Yeah.
I mean, it's real. It's what we're dealing with. There's one shipyard in Canada. Tim Charles has just finished a refit or completion of a Christensen.
Right.
And I understand he's got a 34, 35 meter boat he's starting. Good for him, I hope.
It's always been a great brand.
Yeah. Unfortunately, that brand is gone. But, you know, I think some of the legacy endures, and some of the talent that was used to build those boats is still in the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah.
And you got Delta, and you've got Westport, and you've got Berger. And you could throw Viking into the mix a little bit because they're building some 80 and 90 foot sport fish boats that require a little crew. But, you know, not the same as what we're dealing with here. So we have really seen an attrition in our new boat construction, but we've also seen a renaissance, I think, in shipyard infrastructure, shipyard investment.
For sure. And well, that had to happen. I mean, the boats that are being built today are massive. It's hard to believe.
Right. So I want to ask the question from an owner's perspective. What is the drive? What is the influence? What's the motivation to refit, say, in North America versus Europe, or build in North America versus Europe?
Well, I think so much of it comes down to convenience to start. You want to be close to the boat being refit.
Right.
so that you can be participating in that refit, because as you know, it's amazing what can go wrong when you're not there.
Oh yeah.
And then I think it comes down to dollars and cents. I mean, if you can plug into a good yard at the right time and the quotes come back at a reasonable number, you know, you'd rather have it, I think, North American serviced, just because of the parts and everything else. It's just so much easier.
Right.
You know, when we were in Thailand, trying to get parts
in COVID,
in, fixed,
when
done,
the supply chain was at its worst.
You could make it up.
No.
But no, at the end of the day, as you said, I mean, I think the yards here are getting better and better, and we've had nothing but a good experience.
Bravo. Yeah, we see a lot of cool things happening. I'm close with Michael and John Kelly that have taken over Bradford's, yep. and Colin Kiley, who's stepped in and helped them with a lot of insight.
Well, and FedShip just bought a new yard in Georgia.
Yeah. They've partnered up with Safe Harbor at the David Savannah Yachting Center. And they've got that going in right
away. What a difference that is going to make.
Oh, yeah. They bring their talent over here in an investment.
Huge.
Farouk and I were just talking about that this morning, and I applaud that. I think when we try to do business regionally and we don't think globally, we hurt ourselves.
Yeah.
You know, there are so many resources in... and same thing, when the European market looks at what they're doing and doesn't understand or respect what we're trying to do over here, they have to understand if the U.S. market is suffering, ultimately that virus crosses the ocean.
Sure.
You know, they're not immune to the same types of things that we've gone through. They're in a very good place right now, but they're only there because they're doing things the right way and they're maintaining that. If they lose that vision, they could lose that as well. Yeah. So, you know, we're perhaps a hard lesson learned to pay attention to. Mm-hmm. That's good. How about in new construction? Is it purely the brand and the reputation? What drives the decision to, for instance, go to FedShip versus go to Delta?
Well, I mean, there's nothing left to say other than that. I mean, FedShip is renowned worldwide as the Rolls Royce of boats. I mean, and I think everybody in the marine industry aspires to have a FedShip.
Yeah.
I mean, I certainly did.
Sure.
And, you know, haven't been disappointed. I think FedShip, kudos to the whole organization, from servicing their owners to being on call when something is needed. I can't say enough good things. They've always been there for me, and in selling this boat, I think if I were ever to get another boat, you become loyal to FedShip. I'd get another FedShip.
They've earned it.
Yeah,
and I'll tell you, in my previous tenure in manufacturing equipment, I had the privilege of working with FedShip on multiple number of occasions, and those projects always started not with knocking on doors selling something, but getting involved in the design process and integrating what we're going to do with what they're doing and working with their naval architects and their engineers and their project managers from the beginning. You know, it wasn't they bought something, they stuck it on. It was something that was developed and integrated with the rest of their boat. And I know that model follows through their entire construction design.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. So, no, that's good. That's good. That is going to be one of the bigger challenges that U.S. boat builders have to deal with. And yet, I'll tell you that there is a core group of people that tend to find loyalty to the Burger line. Not as big a boat, but...
Another great brand.
Absolutely.
100%.
Yeah. And I was sitting with Darrell Wakefield the other day, and, you know, Westport's gone through a number of evolutions. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think there's good things coming for them, too. But... It's going to be really important that I think the boat builders today pay attention to these success stories, how FedShip built their brand and their loyalty and supports their product wherever it is at the highest level, and then earns that that loyalty from the owners and those that aspire to have that.
100%.
Absolutely. You charter.
We do.
Talk to me about that. How is that experience for you?
you know what? It's been amazing. I think I genuinely love creating memories for people. And as you mentioned at the beginning of the conversation, so much of it comes back to crew.
Yeah.
And happy crew, happy boat.
Yeah.
And what a gift to be able to give to other people that charter, you know, part of your personality. This boat is part of my personality.
Absolutely.
And to have every conceivable toy on it, the crew able to teach all of our charter guests how to work a hydro board, how to work a electronic surfboard, how to, you know, the water bikes. You know, I don't think there's no better satisfaction than guests walking away from their charter and think this was one of the best experiences we've ever had.
There you go. Now, that ties into your BG lifestyle.
It does.
And you've teased me and tempted me about coming up to Ocala to see your ranch.
It's time to get you on a horse.
I tell you, you know, I've been out. I was out in Montana a few years ago and spent almost 2 weeks on the back of a horse, going into some amazing places.
Fantastic!
And I love that kind of thing. It is just, there's nothing quite like it.
Well, that, again, and that goes back to the experience.
That's
it. Those are memories that you will have for the rest of your life.
Yep, absolutely true. And I that's what I enjoy in following you socially and talking to you and understanding how you've turned your successes, which that's its own story, into something that you're able to share with so many other people and bring them into that world of yours.
Yeah.
And it's fun.
It's the best.
Yeah.
I don't think, I know people don't want to go and sit on a beach anymore. They want an experience. They want an adventure. They want something memorable that they're going to take home with them, that they're going to be able to relive, telling their friends and families of what they did.
Yeah.
And that sort of portrays to the whole beachy lifestyle. I mean, we with my kids, there isn't anything we haven't done. From walking with Komodo dragons in the Komodo Islands to swimming with the whale sharks and in the waters of Indonesia to being in the temples of Bali to playing polo at the ranch or going trail riding at the ranch or the mountain biking at the ranch.
Wow.
And the ranch has its own train that takes you through the ranch.
I saw that. That's crazy.
Past the elephants and the hippopotamuses and the giraffes and the monkeys and
all right, Tristan, I think we're going up to the BG Ranch soon.
I think you have to. It's an amazing feeling for people when they leave that ranch and they can say we did it all.
That's so cool. So I want to bring something else in the conversation. I'm, as you know, and I know you're also, because I was with you at an event last year with this International Seakeeper Society.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a big supporter. I brag that I've got the smallest Discovery vessel in their fleet at 10 meters, but I use it a lot. Tristan and I, last week, were 26 miles offshore in the Gulf Stream with some scientists from St. Petersburg or Sarasota, dragging nets behind our boat to collect samples for some research they're doing related to the food chain for sea turtles.
Wow.
Which was cool. So a day on the ocean, it's always a good day, right? But the Seakeeper Society is cool because they create an environment by bringing owners and citizen science and real scientists
together. It's an amazing organization.
Absolutely. And I'm a big advocate of that, and every time I have the opportunity to put that forward, I try to kind of give them a little bit of a push, because I think the more people that know about them, and I know you do, the more opportunities get opened up.
Absolutely.
There's an initiative that we're working on right now, and I'd love your opinion on this. So I'm also working with, and I have for many years, an organization called Project Baseline. Now, I bring this up because you're a diver, mm-hmm. and you know that we're a diving family myself, and I tell the story. I go back to when I was early in my diving days, and I was down in Lukey in the Florida Keys. It's a national park area.
Right, yeah.
And in 1978, 79, when I went there first, I would say that if you looked at what that coral reef looked like in the life there, it would be probably a lot like your wife saw in Indonesia.
Right.
Just stunning, live, hard corals, soft corals, you know, nursery fish.
Spectacular.
Spectacular. I was with them in 2016. We were on Baseline Explorer doing some research, and I was a volunteer diver with them. We had two one-atmosphere submersibles we were working with. It was a lot of fun. And we went back to Luke Key, and I came out of the water crying. It looks like a petrified forest, a desert. It was horrible. Yet, I took my son last summer, because he did an internship at the Marine Laboratory to learn about corals down in the Keys. And we were diving, and he came out of the water going, "Wow, that's really pretty." What's the disconnect there? The disconnect is there's the baseline.
Mm-hmm.
This is where Project Baseline comes in. My baseline was I saw it at its very best, and I saw the degradation over many decades and what's happened there. His baseline is what he saw. What he saw is what most tourists see the first time: pretty fish.
Yeah.
The hard corals have been replaced by colorful algaes.
Mm-hmm.
Not very healthy, but that's what you see. And we say, if you don't know where you came from, you don't know where you can go.
Sure.
And you don't know whether. So Project Baseline does this. We empower divers, and this is where we're trying to bring it into the yachting world, teach crew and owners' families how to, when they do a dive, create a baseline station, which means you go and you set up a camera and you go with the GoPro. Almost everybody goes in the water with the GoPro now. And you go to some place you can go back to again, identified either by Latlon GPS or just there's a wreck someplace you get on. And you take a few video shots or photos and basically write a few observations down on a wet notes. This is the visibility, the temperature. And that gets uploaded to a database. And as people keep going back there and the database gets loaded up, you will start seeing whether we're seeing improvements or right. further degradation.
Right.
And so what we're trying to do with Sea Keepers and Project Baseline is bring the two together and export this onto yachts. So as they move around the world and crew move from boats to boats, can take it with
great
them.
Great idea.
So I'm going to put you on the spot, Bobby. Hmm. Can we make BG Charade a baseline boat one of these days?
Absolutely. Talk to the captain and let's make it happen.
All right. That's fantastic. So I think I've accomplished my mission today in this wonderful, dreary, rainy Palm Beach boat show.
No, what a shame.
But listen, I'm hanging out here with a great friend in the industry on this beautiful boat. I've got my son here to support me, and we're going to walk docks that don't have a lot of people on them today.
And make it all happen.
Make it all happen. Make the best of what you got.
Bobby, thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
I
wish you nothing but success and fun with this boat.
And you as well. Tristan, have a great day.
Thanks. And who has more fun than you?
There's not many.
Again, this is Rick Thomas, host of Yachting USA, here with Bobby Genovese. And I will talk to you guys later. Until then, I'm out of here.